Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
As we welcome you into the Fairways of Life show, as we sit on this day, less than 24 hours from the scheduled start of the 2024 Masters. This will be the 88th edition of this Masters tournament. Now, the prospect of the Masters starting in 24 hours is another question entirely, indeed, as the weather early on in this week and the buildup to the start of the competition has been very much a part of the story. Here is the official forecast right now for today. Mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers, 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. It is through the overnight hours where this front will be coming through. A low of 63 and high of 82 today. Winds south-southeast at a gentle 17 to 15 miles per hour, and that is a relative speed. On Thursday, mostly cloudy with a 90% chance of showers and thunderstorms, windy. Forecast rainfall, 1 to 1.5 inches. Gusts, now look at this, please note, because this is different than what we discussed yesterday. Gusts upwards to 40 to 45 miles per hour between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m., the fillet of the first round tomorrow. 40 to 45 miles per hour, note. The low of 65, a high of 77, winds south, shifting to southwest. The sustained winds are 15 to 25 miles per hour, but then you've got those gusts that they're talking about being so very, very high. And then on Friday, mostly sunny, it's still windy in the forecast, noticeably less humid. Thank you for that. High of 73, but the winds are completely shifting to northwest. Again, 15 to 20 miles per hour sustained with gusts over 30. That's just the first 2 days. Talk about setting up for watching car wrecks everywhere, right? And then Saturday and Sunday, Saturday mostly sunny and warm, high of 78, winds west-northwest turning west at 7 to 15 miles per hour. And Sunday mostly sunny and warm, high of 83, winds west turning southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. So it's interesting on so many different levels, one of which is they're practicing to play a golf course that is not going to play nearly the same during the opening two rounds of the tournament proper because of the strength of those winds and the direction of those winds combined. However, Dom, you said you were taking a closer look at this before we went on the air in terms of the hour by hour forecasts. And in your opinion, when you really dial into the details of this forecast, it's even more ominous than the scary forecast that I just read.
Yes to all of that, Matt. I'm trying to do math on the fly here. 0.2, 0.1. Hold on a second. I'll go over this in a second. But to give you a sense of, I think that those rain numbers that we looked up on the screen there that said 1 to 1.5 inches of rain, I think yes. That is very conservative based on the information that I have. I think they're going to get well over 2 inches of rain. And the forecast I have says they're going to have well over an inch of rain full stop from probably about 5:30 to 6:30 in the morning on Thursday. Just in that time period. Now, I'll give you a total rainfall that I have at my disposal in a moment here when I do the math. But essentially, the rain is going to begin at 1 a.m. I'm going to go over this quickly, Matt, and then I want you to just comment on how you think in general with this updated information that we have. What are we looking at for play on Thursday? How could this possibly impact play? Rain starts on Wednesday, overnight, Wednesday into Thursday. 1 a.m. is going to start raining. Heavy rain, 5 a.m., more than a half an inch of rain is going to fall in a 45-minute period at 5 in the morning. 6 a.m., rain, more rain. This is all 100% chance of rain. This isn't like, oh, I wonder if it's going to rain or not. 100%, all the way through. The only lightning I see in the forecast is between 8 and 9 in the morning which ironically is right around. Andrew, put the tee times out, but the tee times are out. We'll talk about this. But the first tee time is, I believe, at 8 a.m., right in the peak of all this rain. Also, in addition to being at the peak of the rain, that's when the lightning's potentially going to be happening. So I think
don't
at the
forget
bare minimum,
it,
Matt,
Dom,
we're looking at a delayed
start. It's 7:40 a.m. We have Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and Gary Player hitting the ceremonial tee shot. That's what's scheduled. So there is just before that, which, again, all of this is in the worst of it.
Correct. So it's going to continue to rain all the way through up until around noontime. I have the rain basically coming to a full stop. And, you know, 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, I mean, we're looking at 20% chance of rain. So the afternoon is likely going to clear up, assuming they can get the course up to par for play with all that rain getting dumped on it. So I would anticipate, Matt, and I'd like your comment, that the morning groups probably wouldn't get to tee off until noon, and the afternoon groups might not tee off at all. What say you?
Do you have, and that forecast, can you dial in for me what the wind speeds will be hour by hour, at least the gusts too,
yeah,
if you have it?
Yeah, the wind sucks. It's, yes, I do. It sucks. It's awful. You know, at 8:30 in the morning, it's 100% chance of rain, a quarter inch of rain is falling, lightning is going, and 45 mile per hour gusts of wind. I mean, that's like tropical storm for like an hour and a half. That's brutal. That's insane. The sustained gust throughout this rain period is basically 15 miles per hour, and the gusting is going to be getting over 30 miles per hour. In the afternoon, when it's supposedly stopped raining, the gusts are actually going to increasingly get worse as the evening goes on. So let's say they don't tee off until 1:30, right? The gusts are 27 miles per hour at that time, with sustained winds around 15. But at 4:30, at 5 p.m., the sustained winds are up to 18 miles per hour, and the gusts are up to 36 miles per hour at that time. So that's wild. And the gusts are over 30 up until it gets dark, 35, 36, 38 miles per hour. I mean, that's crazy. So why don't you comment? I'm going to add up the rain totals I have, and I'm going to give you a total rainfall that I have. Go ahead.
When Bob Jones and Dr. Alistair McKenzie designed this golf course, they wanted it to be, in essence, an inland links, you know, an homage to the old course at St. Andrews. The difference is that when you play traditional links golf courses, while there is movement on the greens, obviously, there's some undulations, it's very subtle in terms of its undulations. And generally, on a links golf course where the green speeds are slower, say for a championship speed, it might be rolling at a 10, maybe a 10 and a half if they're really bold. And the reason why they're doing that is because of the fact that it is seaside and it's subject to powerful winds. Well, those powerful winds, when you get up to in that setting that I just described for you, that setting is one where if winds get to speeds of 35 miles per hour, they will cause the golf ball to move. And whether you call that oscillation or whether it can't hold on a slope, it causes the golf ball to move and it would cause a suspension of play. Now, obviously, a wet green is going to be a little bit slower in terms of its speed. Paul Eales just sent me, by the way, Dom, a message from London today or from outside of Liverpool today, sorry. And he said, what are you, in a prison? No, I'm Dom. Clearly on the road. That's how it goes. Everything is old and with lots of bricks surrounding it. I think it's kind of cool looking, actually. Reminds me of the feature that we ran the other day about the old Confederate powder works and all the bricks that they use in a 2 mile long facility for making gunpowder during the Civil War. But so you're talking about on relatively slow by comparison and flatter greens, 35 miles per hour is the demarcation where you're going to get at least oscillation, if not flat out movement of the golf ball, and play as a result has to be suspended. We've seen it multiple times. The aforementioned old course, we saw it in 10 and we saw it in 15, both of which had play had to be suspended just because of wind. Now, in this case, we have conspiracy with rain and with lightning that goes along with it. Again, I'm not as concerned about standing water as a long-term being in terms of a matter of hours or washing out an entire day at Augusta National because of their drainage engineering, because of how sharp the hills and the slopes are on the property, that everything drains down to the tributaries of Rays Creek. So that doesn't concern me as much. It is a concern in the moment, though, because there's only so much you can do to cause, it's like filling your, turning your faucets on really hard and your sink starts to fill up with water, regardless of the fact that the water is still draining at the bottom of the bowl. There's going to be some of that going on. You're going to, particularly in the bunkers, that can happen. Different low-lying areas in the greens, that's going to happen. The sub-air systems that they have, the technology can whisk all that away, but only can do so much to a deluge coming down from Mother Nature. So my opinion, based upon the information that you've given me right now, Dom, my opinion is that this Masters will not start on time. I think it's going to be delayed. I think in the middle part of the latter part of the morning into the middle part of the afternoon, I do think we're going to see play. I think players are going to be playing through the rain. It's a golf course that regardless of what they do with the sub air, top of the turf is going to be soft. So they're going to be firing at these pins. You're going to see some better scores made than maybe you traditionally would at the Masters. So if it were not as wet as it is definitely 100% going to be, the storms coming through the night. So it'll be a restless night for all of us as these storms come ripping through the region. No doubt about that. Not to mention the restlessness of the players preparing to go out. I think as they get back into the afternoon and those wind speeds get up to the vicinity that you were talking about, I think there's a very real possibility that there will be a suspension of play until those winds mitigate somewhat. There isn't too much that they can do on Friday in terms of expanding the window because of where they're starting. They could pick up another hour if they wanted to. There are other things they could do in extreme circumstance, like sending them off 1 and 10, but I don't see that happening. I think tomorrow, Friday is going to, I could see them playing on Friday, although some of those wind gusts are borderline too with moving the golf ball on those very undulating greens of Augusta National. But we'll see how it plays itself out. But I definitely think based upon what we have heard, based upon the current forecast, and remember the forecast that I gave you before Dom started to dial into the nitty gritty, the forecast I gave you is the official forecast. And it's already extremely ominous and frightening. So I think we're going to see an impact on the start of the Masters. Unfortunate for the Augusta National members that, you know, the table is fully set and then something of this severity comes ripping through. So we'll see how it plays itself out. Now,
I'm afraid to give you the rain totals I have, Matt.
What did you have? What? Oh, yeah, I forgot you were adding those up. Go ahead.
I don't know if I want to share them. They're very bad.
Go ahead. We can take it.
According to this, if the rain falls, what I have, we're looking at 3 inches of rain over the course of the entire day, not at one time, but that is a lot of rain. It's too much. Yeah. It's too much rain.
I think that there's only so much that the all powerful can do that to try to mitigate that. The course is going to be wet.
So do you
it's
think,
going to be soft.
Just to wrap a bow around the weather, because there's a lot of other things I know we want to talk about. Do you think that the afternoon groups, what do you think the likelihood is that they get to hit a tee shot on Thursday?
Well, I'd start with the morning groups, and I would put it at near zero.
Well,
my opinion.
The morning groups will play some golf. I'm saying, like, Andrew, what's the last
I don't think they
time?
Will.
Two something?
I don't think they will in the morning. I think the morning groups that, because there's going to be, based on their forecast, lightning in the area,
the
I don't think there'll be any
there,
play at 8 a.m. I think the first time you're going to see play in earnest tomorrow, based upon what you said, Dom, is going to be no earlier than about 9:30 tomorrow morning. And then you're starting the people at 8 o'clock.
I think
so they're already going to be.
I don't think they hit a golf shot until I don't think they're going to hit a golf shot till 11 o'clock. That's what I think.
And you're saying that because of the amount of rain and not just the lightning.
Correct.
Okay,
fair enough. I think if it's absolutely pouring and it's blowing 35 miles per hour, how can they go out?
Well, again, if the ball's not moving on the green and there's not standing water, they're going to go out. But I believe that when it comes down that heavy, there's going to be standing water. And I think if the wind is as high as they're saying, it has a potential of moving the ball on these greens. So the combination. So let's split the difference and say they go out.
Like that are teeing off at like 12:24 or 12:12. Like they're going to get delayed 4 hours or 5 hours and not even be able to tee off.
Well, I think they're going to get delayed at least 2 hours, and they could be delayed as much as 3 hours if you're correct with what you're saying. So you just slide that whole schedule. But the problem is that you can't just slide the schedule and then bang it out as late as you can into the evening, because I believe that those winds that are coming in on Thursday afternoon, that's when they're talking about wind gusts getting up to 40 plus 45 miles per hour. And that's on the official forecast, which, as you say, is more conservative. So I think it's going to have a massive impact. So anyway, let's see how that ultimately plays itself out. There were a lot of press conferences. I'm not sure if you guys got a chance to see them, you know, masters.com or whatever way you're consuming your build up to the Masters over these days. And I don't know, Dom, I don't know if it was just me, but I thought it was a really interesting year for press conferences. I thought that the players, I guess my first impression would be that by and large, I felt like the majority of the big time players really didn't want to be in the interview room. That there was, again, whether you're reading it, it's like reading clouds, but whether you're reading this by body language or whether you're reading this by the comments that they made, I thought that there was a defensiveness there. I thought that there was a lack of a desire to really engage and be fully open. I mean, there were times when Tiger was talking that I thought that he was one of the most open of all the top players coming in, you know, when he talked about his love for golf, et cetera. Although I will tell you, I was disappointed in Tiger's presser that here he just had a meeting with Yasser, played golf with him, and not one person asked him a question about it. That is incredible to me. Not one question, right? Everybody seemingly in the press corps is consumed with this conversation. They're consumed with discussions about John Rahm supposedly having buyer's remorse, you know, about going to live. And I'm like, he flat out said he took a long time to make the decision and he's happy with the decision that he made, but he's respectful to the tour and he's respectful of these places that he's missed. And I'm like, what am I missing here in terms of the stories that are being built from what took place post? And does that reality, is that reality, I should say, is that impacting the way players are going into that room and going, you know what, I'm going to answer your question as simply as I can on a base level, because ultimately you're going to interpret it however you want to. And this, it sometimes makes me wonder. See, we would do this every day, what we're doing right now, but it sometimes makes me wonder if the intensity of the buildup to these events is overdone. It causes, you know, viewer burnout, in essence. And I almost got a sense that when it came to the interaction, to use that word, with the media and the players, that there was a sense of burnout. What do you think, Dom? Did you get that impression or something along those lines, similar?
Yeah, I would mostly agree with what you're saying. I watched all the press conferences and they were uninspiring. Sort of the same stuff we've seen the last couple of years. I don't know about overkill in terms of coverage. I mean, it's the Masters, right? I mean, they do, leading up to the Super Bowl, they'll do 12 hours nonstop coverage of that, and a lot of people are going to watch it. I mean, it's the Masters. I think anybody watching this show, anybody watching Golf Channel or anything else you can find or consume online or digitally or otherwise, there's a lot of people very excited for the Masters. What I think is probably one of the more interesting storylines, which I mentioned to Matt before we came on the air very briefly, was some of the better players in the world, if you look at like the world rankings, for example, are really not playing great. Like they're not on form, if you will. And Scottie Scheffler has been playing so well, so incredibly well statistically. It's starting to feel like it'd be almost a surprise to see some of the, you know, someone who's ranked 12th win the Masters, just because a lot of those guys down there are not playing great. And Scottie Scheffler's playing so much better than everybody else. So I think part of the press conference, you know, blah, is sort of like, are there really 15 guys that have a chance? Because it's kind of feeling like maybe there isn't. Even though there's big names, right? All the best players, quote unquote, in the world are there. But they're not really on form. I mean, even Brooks Koepka, who's a major machine, you know, regardless of how you feel about LIV Golf, he's not really been playing great there. I don't know if you put stock in that or not, but either way, it's not
great. You can't put stock in that with Brooks. That doesn't mean anything.
True.
The only thing you could put stock in with Brooks is how he plays in this Masters and how it compares to when he's playing at the PGA Championship. You're going to look at it and go, because if you try to do it off events, whether he's LIV or whether he was, you go back to his PGA Tour days, you can't draw anything from that. That's not who he is. It's not how he's built. I mean, I would rather say, going back to the press conference thing, when Brooks was there in front of the media, did you get a different impression when he was addressing the media? Did he sound like he was defeated in any way, or that he was coming in any other mindset than the mindset of a gladiator that is Brooks Koepka?
No, I got the same feeling I got from everybody. I think that what I mean is, I feel like everybody sort of felt the same that they always feel. Like, right? Like, Victor Hovland felt like he's searching. He's always searching to fix his golf swing. So they're asking him questions, and he's like, I'm going to figure it out. I got 15 coaches. I'm going to do it. I'm over here. This guy says to come over here. I'm going to go there. And then you're just like, okay, well, he's doing his head. And Jordan is the opposite, right? Jordan's searching, right? And then he gets to the Masters, and he starts talking about creativity, and he stops playing, in your words, golf swing, and he just plays with just pure creativity and artistry, which is how he plays his best golf. And Brooks, same thing. Brooks gets up there, and he's like a stone-cold killer. They're like, you know, how are you feeling? What do you think? And he's like, listen, I've been thinking about this moment since December. This is all I care about. I'm here to win. Someone asked him, you play so well in the major championships. Do other players come up to you and say, you know, hey, man, how do you do it? And he's like, no, I don't talk to anybody. I'm here to crush everybody. I'm locked in. I'm not here to talk to anybody. I'm not talking to anyone on the range. I'm not hanging out. I'm just here to kill. So, and that's kind of what he always is when he comes into these tournaments. So I feel like everyone's sort of on par with what they normally are, but I don't know. Although I'll read the question of the day, Matt, because it pertains to what we're discussing. Talking about Brooks Koepka and his major championship prowess. Is there an active player, current active player, that can reach 10 major championships in their career or more? And I gave four options. Brooks Koepka, obviously. Rory McIlroy. Andrew, put the, I think we got a list of all-time major championships. That's why I have Brooks and Rory high on that list, because as you can see from this list, it's coming on your screen. Brooks is at 5, Rory's at 4. No one else in this field is there. So I have a write-in category. If people want to, like, I've already seen some people write in with Scottie Scheffler, write in with Wyndham Clark. And then I have a fourth category that is no chance in hell. There's just no one is going to hit that number. And right now, Brooks is at 47%, Matt. There's a lot of faith in Brooks and majors right now. And 37% are saying no chance in hell. So right now, the majority is like, listen, Brooks has got a chance to do it. But outside Brooks, there's just no one that can do this.
So what's
and
Rory
Brooks
at?
Brooks is still relatively young. Rory is at 0%. There's no faith in Rory right now. In fairness, Matt, when was the last time he won? I think it was 10 years ago now.
It was over now, but yes. Okay. I do want to talk about that. You've piqued my interest on that. We'll get into that as well. I want to talk about the odds, because the odds play into this, and that's basically what we're all doing right now is acting like bookies and talking about possibilities for this week. I don't know if you guys saw, but we're giving away a Callaway Paradigm AI Smoke Driver, one of the brand new Callaway drivers. We told the world about it on social media over the last couple of days. And if you go to our social media, you can see my handles right there in the corner of the screen, at Matt Adams FOL on Instagram or on X, formerly known as Twitter. You got to register on those. You got to tag 3 friends in the comments. You got to make sure that you are subscribed on our Fairways of Life YouTube page. So you got to take a little bit of effort to take to have the chance to win a driver that's selling for upwards to $600 that we are giving to you. So be sure to get in on that. I don't want you guys to miss out on that opportunity. I'm still curious about what your master's setup looks like. Would love to see it. Dom said write to contact@fairwaysoflife.com. You can go to our webpage, fairwaysoflife.com, and you can click it there too. But would love to have you guys show us what your master's setup looks like. I want to see how many TV screens, your computer screens, your phone, and all the different ways that you're going to try to consume the tournament starting tomorrow morning. Fingers crossed with that weather forecast that we talked about. The Fairways of Life show is presented by the PGA Tour Superstore, now 68 stores strong from coast to coast, and they are big and they are beautiful and they are fantastic. There's no doubt about that, because if your game needs it, surely you can find it in a PGA Tour Superstore. But I think these superstars are their people. You're shopping with the pros. Where? At your happy place.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. The PGA Tour Superstore. It's all in the hips. Where every swing is possible. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find all the latest gear, apparel, and personalized club fittings.
Is this goodbye?
We've only just begun.
Shop with the pros at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous links courses and our world-famous parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
Ben Hogan Golf Equipment is back. Established in 1953, we serve golfers who demand excellence of their equipment. Designed by the game's best engineers, forged in the world's best foundries, and built to order in the USA. Don't settle for off-the-rack disappointment. Elevate your game with custom clubs at direct-to-consumer pricing. Exclusively at BenHoganGolf.com. That's BenHoganGolf.com.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team. The absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Playing on the PGA Tour is not easy.
But you know what is easy?
Hitting the 524 series from Tour Edge.
Hitting linebackers and home runs used to be easy.
Out here, you're gonna need all the easy you can get.
Introducing the 524 series from Tour Edge. The easiest clubs you'll ever hit. Even the best players in the world can use a little easy.
I like the sound of that. Look out, PGA Tour.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning 3 resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com. All right, so Dom, you've got me interested in your question of the day. Give us an update on how the voting's going again and the prospect of getting to double-digit majors.
I gave 4 options. Brooks Koepka, Roy McIlroy, because they are the closest currently of active players. Brooks Koepka's 33, by the way, and as long as he's healthy, I feel like he stands a chance at least. I gave a write-in category, and then there's a category that I call no chance in hell. It's just not realistic for anybody, any of them. 47% are saying Brooks Koepka can do it. It's realistic. And then 18% people are writing in. You know, I got some Wyndham Clarks in there. A lot of people are saying Scottie Scheffler's got a shot. And then 36% are just saying, just listen, there's no chance. Andrew, why don't you put that list back up of all-time major championships? I mean, obviously, you got guys like Jordan Spieth who – it's weird, right? Everyone goes on these runs, you know, the 2-, 3-, 4-year run where they sort of seem to collect a few majors. And then for whatever reason, they just fall off. They just can't maintain. Another reason
why Tiger's
dominance is so special.
Here's a question I have for everybody. Look on the column underneath where you have Jack Nicklaus at 18 at the top of it, and at the bottom of that column you have Phil Mickelson with 6. Right? Obviously, if Brooks Koepka wins this week, he's going to match those with 6: Lee Trevino, Nick Faldo, Phil Mickelson. But consider just for a second Phil Mickelson, who already is the oldest man to have ever won a major championship. Phil Mickelson, who finished tied for 2nd last year at this event, 2. Then consider the fact that Phil Mickelson is a 3-time winner at Augusta National. Let me just give you a glimpse of his record at Augusta. As mentioned, Phil Mickelson won 3 times. 2nd place finishes, he's at 2. 3rd place finishes, he's at 5. Top 5 finishes then collectively, he's done it 12 times. Top 5. Top 10 finishes, Phil Mickelson has done it 16 times. Top 25 finishes, just to see if his comfort around the place, 21. And in 30 events, he's made the cut 27 times. Amongst the distinctions of what he holds with Augusta, most consecutive cuts made with 30 from 1999 to 2007. Longest streak of top 10s with 5 from 2004 through the next four after that. So all I'm saying is this. Now, I wouldn't, if you put a gun to my head and said, so are you saying that Phil Mickelson can get to 10 major championships? No, I don't really feel that's the thing, but I'm just posing this question. If Phil he came close last year, right? Tied for 2nd. I realize he was 4 strokes back when it was all said and done, but he still was in the 2nd place position along with Brooks behind John Rahm. If Phil Mickelson were to win this week, if Phil Mickelson got to 7 major championships, so 3 away from the double digits that you're talking about, would you begrudge Phil Mickelson and say there's no way that he can get 3 more, even though he knocked on the door last year? We're having a conversation saying, say, if he won, and he's already the oldest to have won a major. So obviously, because of his size, because of his strength, because of his swing, his long swing, he has kept some distance. And so I don't know. I'm just posing that question out there.
There's no way, Matt. There's no way. He's 53. Come on. What are we talking about here?
I know, but this is a guy.
Majors? Come on. What are we talking
about? When you say he's 53, you could talk about 53 years old with any other player, any other one, and go, he's 53. He hasn't done anything in 5 years. He hasn't done anything in 10 years. He hasn't done anything in more than that. It'd be a reasonable assumption. But when you're talking about Phil Mickelson, it doesn't apply. He's doing things at 53. He's doing things in his 50s, let me put it that way, that other players are not doing and haven't ever done. So he's doing something that's never been done before. So just consider that.
I think the argument that he's going to win another major is very, very, very real, whether it's the Masters or somewhere else. That's absolutely, could see that happening for sure. But 4 more? Come on. Brooks Koepka, he's still only 33. I was looking at his stats. So he's only played in 38 major championships, right? And he's finished in the top 10 in 18 of them.
Yeah.
48% top 10 percentage right now.
Yeah, so if you
could
pull
say
up your chart again.
Figured it out. If you remember from last year, that's what he said. He finished runner-up.
Well, he said he wasn't going to make the mistakes.
I know what I did wrong.
Right. He said he wasn't going to make mistakes that he made at the Masters, and then he wins the PGA right after it. But if you look back at that chart again, with Brooks Koepka with six major championships. Andrew, put the chart back up again, please. Brooks Koepka has five major championships. If he were to win, he'd have six major championships in this conversation, right? I 100% think that Brooks Koepka can get to 10. 100%. Frankly, I think that Brooks Koepka could win two this year, right? And when it comes to Rory McIlroy, if Rory McIlroy were to win this Masters, part of me wonders if it would become a Sergio situation where Sergio breaks through, wins the Masters in 2017. He's like, I can finally tick that box. I'm finally a major champion that my game always foretell that I would be. And from that point on, it kind of disappears, you know, blips up here and there at majors, but it wasn't like he was a driving force at majors. And coming in, we have a discussion about, you know, Sergio. Rory hasn't won a major in over a decade, right? Again, he's had plenty of opportunities. He's been, you know, trying to take a bite out of the apple, hasn't been able to close for a whole variety of different reasons, some of his own making and some not. So with Rory, he has said, and this comes down to with Rory, because particularly the last couple of years, Rory has been asked to speak so much that you have to get to a point where you start to filter through what he's saying and saying, did he say this because he was talking metaphorically? He was talking, you know, in a broad brush, or did he mean it? And he said, if he wins the Masters, he might just say, that's it, and I'm walking away. Well, what does that walking away mean? If he was serious about that, you know, because everything he says, he's going to say with a smile in that setting. Same as when people are asking him, hey, do you think you're going to go to LIV? And he said, well, you never know. Could he win the Masters and go over to LIV, which would still make him available to major championships? So I guess the bottom line is what I'm saying with when it comes to Rory McIlroy, he's older than Brooks Koepka, not a lot, a couple of years, but he's older. If he wins this Masters and Rory gets to five, I don't see the same likelihood of him getting to 10 or more that I see with Brooks Koepka. It seems weird to say because we're talking about Rory McIlroy, and it seems like we're supposed to almost by default present Rory McIlroy as the player that's most likely to fill in the blank here because he's Rory. Almost as if people forget that right now Brooks has more majors than Rory. And the fact that Rory hasn't won a major in over 10 years, I have mad respect for Rory McIlroy. Don't get me wrong. Just something hasn't been working. You know, here we have Brooks Koepka that said, no, I know what I did wrong at the Masters. Media says, oh, could you share that with us? No, but it won't happen again. And with Rory, we see recurrence in those areas where he has had weakness, and particularly at Augusta National, that rears its head with what he does with a high lofted club in hand. We've watched him airmail greens and hit it into the azaleas, right? Because of his length, even though the golf course is longer now, 7,500 and change, we watch Rory McIlroy have difficulty coming in with the wedge in hand. People have criticized that and call that a decision process. He alluded to yesterday not getting drawn into the fact that the golf course tries to lull you into a mindset where you take more risk on than you should. Is that a new Rory? Is that a more mature Rory? He's coming around the same age where he is past the same age where Phil started winning his major championships because Phil took on a more mature look in terms of the risks that he was willing to take. Pretty much in all golf courses, in all golf tournaments, championships, but certainly at the majors, and he started winning majors as a result. I have always believed and still believe that in terms of absolute natural ability to play the game, that Phil Mickelson was the best probably of all time, just his natural ability to do it. But Phil had a mindset that was very Phil-like in my view, where he knew it. Phil's very self-aware, as we all know. He's very intelligent, as we all know. And I think Phil's mentality was, I'm going to do it because of what I'm capable of doing. I don't know how his work ethic compared to, say, like Tiger Woods, but I think we all believe that Tiger Woods was probably the hardest worker through that stretch. We know Vijay Singh was one of them as well. And there was this belief that with Phil, that you can't force wins, even though he had a lot of them, but you can't force them. You have to take at times, particularly this as relates to majors, you have to take what opportunities you have there and take advantage of them when they're there. And as Phil got older and has the wisdom and has the maturity, all of a sudden he's breaking through. And as we just talked about, what he's done is remarkable. He's the oldest ever to win a major. All time. He came in second at this major last year. Think about that. So, yeah, it is interesting. If I were doing your survey right now, Dom, I do believe that Brooks is capable of getting to double digits. There's no doubt in my mind about it, to be honest with you. I do doubt that Rory will get to 10 now. I'd love to see it happen. I'd love to see with any players. I think it's great when we have players that go on a run. I mean, we've talked about that in this show. Do you want to see a dominant player in the game of golf? Is that good for golf to have a dominant player when you have someone come into a major and through a body of work at the majors, they're a prohibitive favorite? This week, the prohibitive favorite, of course, is Scottie Scheffler based on form. He's a one-time major champion. Now, he won his major here, so that's a pretty good body of work. But I still, in terms of if I had to, if they gave me a choice to say, you know, you got to either take Brooks or Scottie Scheffler, one or the other, I'm taking Brooks. Right?
I mean,
and that leads me to that.
I love talking about the all-time stuff, Matt. I just like talking about the all-time stuff. Anybody that thinks parity is good for sports is insane. If you look at any sport, look at Caitlin Clark. And look what she did for Iowa and the ratings for women's basketball, which were way higher than the Masters, right? Way higher than anything, right? Mahomes, Brady, Federer, Tiger, right? Nobody cares unless someone is crushing everybody. Then it's a story. That drags people in that don't watch golf. They're like, man, who's this person that's winning all these games, all these tournaments, all this sport? Who's this team? Where'd this team come from? They're winning all the championships. That's what people want to see. And so that's why my question of the day is, because if you look at that, if you look at the list of major championships, right, you know, Jordan's got three, Morikawa's got two, Rahm's got two, all these incredibly talented players that we're talking about playing actively right now, none of them are all-time quote-unquote greats right now. Brooks and Rory are on the short list of guys who could become that. Like, top 10 all-time golfer, unequivocal. There's not really anyone else there right now.
Well,
and
no,
so
I wouldn't
me,
say that. I mean, Rory,
that's interesting
wait
and entertaining.
I think you're buying into the whole thing too. Rory only has four major championships. Jordan Spieth has three. Jordan Spieth is coming into this Masters ranked sixth in putting. That's the lowest he's had since he won his Masters. So I think that all of a sudden, if Jordan were to win this week, all of a sudden he's got four. And he's got 4 years younger than Rory McIlroy. So I can't take him out of the conversation either. So there are others. It's not just Brooks and Rory, with all due respect, Dom. There are others that can thrust themselves into that conversation. We're just talking about it this morning, and we're talking about it in the context of those two, because those are two big names that we have been in discussions with. When you talk about Scottie Scheffler, who has been on a run, if Scottie Scheffler does what he has been doing, and he blasts through this field, which I still feel is unlikely, then all of a sudden Scottie Scheffler has two at 27 years old, right? 5 years plus younger than Brooks Koepka. Is he capable of continuing on that run and going to? Yes, of course he is. So it's not as cut and dry as you're laying it out there. All we're looking at is the guys that are closest to it right now in Brooks and Rory and talking about likelihood. And I agree that I think Brooks is very likely to do it. I just see it in the makeup of who he is and his mentality. And he's a strong guy, and he's mentally stronger than that. Which, by the way, what's your voting at right now?
Let's see. It's Now, 50%.
John Rahm's another one that I think is capable.
I wonder if your ramblings are affecting the voting. Like someone's just sitting there like, la, la, la. Matt's talking. They're like, you know what? I'm voting for Brooks. So 50% Brooks. Rory McIlroy's at 6%. Not a lot of faith in Rory. 14% are saying write-in, in which they did. Again, a lot of those write-ins for the most part were Wyndham Clark, Scottie Scheffler, a couple people wrote in John Rahm. And then 29% are saying there's just nobody that's going to do it. It's just not going to happen. So,
okay, well,
I don't know. I mean, I love Jordan Spieth as much as the next guy, Matt, but I don't know how you can take people that have three majors and put them into the conversation that we're having. I mean,
because you're
Rory,
having
you
a conversation.
About him not being, nah, I don't know if he's in the conversation.
Yeah, but you're having a conversation about Rory. He's got four. The divide is only one. And Jordan Spieth's capable, very capable of winning Augusta National because of all the reasons that you said, not the least of which is because he's done it already. And then when you factor in the fact that we're talking about a Jordan that may be finding critical parts of his game again, even though his ball striking on approach and greens regulation are tough. The hard part with all of this year
do you want someone to get to 10?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you want?
Yeah, for me
personally,
would
you like to see
definitely.
Brooks win two majors every year and just dominate? Do you want that?
Yeah. If he didn't win two majors every year, I'd like to see him contending. What I would like to see is I think the greatest era in golf of the in terms of competition, the greatest player of the last, I'll even say 50 years, because that takes in Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. I actually think if you look at Tiger Woods against the spectrum of history, because of the depth of fields that he competed against, that a very strong argument can be made that Tiger Woods is the greatest player of all time. However, when you look at a time period, what I call when the Giants roam, from 1962 to 1986, when Jack Nicklaus won 18 major championships and factored in the top three in majors 56 times. Let that sink in for a second. What's amazing about that is, unlike Tiger, which spoke to both Tiger's dominance and the players at the top of leaderboards week in and week out during his era, of prowess, height of his prowess. With Jack Nicklaus, you had multiple players. Again, I go back to the chart that Andrew and you have put together. Let's put that back up again to illustrate what I'm talking about. Here's Jack Nicklaus with 18 major championships, playing during his era. 9 major championships with Gary Player. He was right in the heart and soul of it. Ben Hogan was still competing through the late 1960s after Jack Nicklaus was by that time a multiple-time major champion. And you can't just wave your hand and go, oh, Ben Hogan, what did it matter? He was broken and he was old. No, he was still in contention for major championships through that time. Tom Watson, who took Jack Nicklaus down in multiple major championships, was playing during that era. Keep on going down that list. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus won his first major in 1962 against Arnold Palmer at Oakmont, and it took a playoff. Lee Trevino, 4 of his 6 came at the hands of taking down Jack Nicklaus one-on-one. Nick Faldo started winning majors at the very end of Jack Nicklaus's career. As you continue down that list, Seve Ballesteros, very much in the mix, including the 1986 Masters that Nicklaus famously won. So what I'm saying is that Raymond Floyd, you can see there with 4, again, in the mix. If you look at how many multiple-time major champions that are all members now of the World Golf Hall of Fame that competed at one time or another directly against the likes of Jack Nicklaus, it speaks to the greatness of Jack Nicklaus. And maybe you think this is mincing words, but the greatest major champion of all time, it to me, is unequivocally Jack Nicklaus. So that's how close those two are in terms of the arguments over a couple of pints and discussing the whole thing. So it's amazing. And I do think who you competed against, I called it a bar fight. I mean, you talk about Tom Weisskopf, Johnny Miller, Ben Crenshaw. Later on, you could have the likes of even a Lanny Watkins who won one major championship, et cetera. You have so many players, Pates, I could go on and on and on, all right in the heart of the eras of Jack Nicklaus. And I say eras with plural because it went from 60s, 70s into the 80s. Then at 58 years old, he's still factoring in major championships with high finishes. It is absolutely incredible, which lends us all kind of back to that conversation we're having about Phil Mickelson, to which I say, why not? The difference with Phil Mickelson and Jack Nicklaus is at the end of it, Jack Nicklaus basically lost interest, right? That might be harsh to put it that way, but Jack Nicklaus went on to his business endeavors, his golf course design, et cetera, et cetera. Phil has never lost that burning desire to compete and to win that we've seen, right? And then he wins oldest of all time, which is, again, strong argument to the whole thing. So it's an interesting conversation. There is no doubt about that. I did want to talk as I'm not, we're not hanging around long today because we know everybody's getting ready for the Masters. I am curious what you guys thought about the press conference with Tiger Woods. I mentioned it earlier in the show that I thought it was cool when somebody basically asked Tiger, you know, why are you still going at it? Why are you doing it? Right. And he was like, oh, I love golf. Always have. It was kind of an introspective moment. It was a cool moment with Tiger Woods. On the other side of it were points that I've talked to you guys about continuously. It's to me, it's almost comical where Tiger comes in. I mean, I think he could come in a wheelchair and he gets up in front of the podium and people are like, well, Tiger, you know, maybe, you know, think it hit a ceremonial tee shot or something. Tiger's, I'm not here on ceremony. I'm here to win. Right. And everyone's like, well, what do you mean you're here? You told us you're going to play once a month. And he was like, yeah, I told you that. But, you know, my game wasn't ready. Body wasn't ready. And he said, my game wasn't ready, which pulls doubt into the conversation about when he pulled out the Genesis because he was sick. Was he sick? Or did he just tell us he pulled out because his body and his game wasn't ready? He wasn't ready for that once a month plan. So we go through the same thing with Tiger all the time where he goes to a press conference. He tells us, I'm here to win. Everyone says, yeah, Tiger's back. And then Tiger goes out and he struggles, which is plenty of record of that. And then afterwards, the reporters are like, Tiger, I thought everything was great. You're great. You were practicing at home. You're playing well. You played a practice round with Fred Couples. Fred said you didn't miss a shot. All the same stuff we hear at the front of every major, right? We all buy into the Tiger hype. And I'm wondering, is that Tiger hype because it's good for business? You know what I'm talking about? Or at some level, when they, that post-round interview, when they say, but Tiger, you told us, and Tiger goes, come on, guys. I'm put together with straw and bread bag twisties. I, you know, what do you want me to do? And it's like, well, Tiger, you set the expectation for us, right? I mean, as fans, we want to see history. We want to see it happen. We want to see it again. We want to see it with our kids that weren't even alive when he won for the first time or whenever he won during those early days, right? We want to see it. It's really cool history. But I guess the question is, at what point do we stop believing? It is our belief, because I believe golf is so much based that underpinned the foundation is built on hope. It's okay to have hope. It's okay to be a fan. It's okay to wish for the best. It's okay to engage in all these conversations that we've heard 100 times since Tiger has spoken this week or been seen on the grounds. Nobody knows Augusta National better than Tiger. He knows the nuance of the golf course. If there's a place for him to play well, it's going to be here at Augusta National. Can he capture lightning in a bottle one more time? Of course he can. He's Tiger Woods. We heard all of that. And in our hearts and in our minds, it echoes around, and we hope. But I just wonder, at what point do you guys, at what point do you stop believing? Right? At what point do we look at it and go, wait a minute, this pattern of setting expectations, backing the expectations with, this is how I'm going to do it. And then we find out another surgery, another injury, another illness, another circumstance changes that. And then another press conference comes around, resets the standard, resets the plan of how he's going to do it, and we all buy into it again, right? Because of hope, because of our own fandomodium, because our own wishes that we're able to witness history one more time. So at this time of year, you know, major championships and the like, you know, in this world of media, you know, there's sports talk shows, plural. There are sports talk radio stations, sometimes plural in given cities, multiple ones. And so, you know, this time of year, they're always looking for content. Like I do golf reporting for CBS Sports Radio, for example. And so I'll do a lot of the radio shows. And invariably, usually the first question I get asked is, what about Tiger Woods? What do you think his chances are? And my answer is pretty much always the same of late, which is, I don't think Tiger's going to make the cut. Hope he plays well, all the rest. And then this year, you've got all these other variables because you've got intense weather coming through on Thursday and no layup in terms of the winds, the intensity of the winds on Friday. And based upon the information that we have in the weather right now, based upon what Dom has told us already and knowing that Tiger is scheduled late on Thursday and early on Friday, which I think they did as a gift to Tiger. I think they looked at it and said, well, it's going to be horrific Thursday morning. We'll put him out Thursday afternoon. And then all of a sudden the weather forecast has gotten worse in terms of the winds on Thursday afternoon. So there's, where are you going to put him? There's no place that you can hide him, but at least it's not the ferocious weather that's going to be around on Thursday morning. And then the belief that, well, you tuck him in on Friday morning because he'll go late early, which isn't great for his body recovery, but late early at least puts him in a position where on Friday, if you look at that 48-hour window, right, Thursday is going to be awful, awful, awful early. And then after the rain starts to subside a little bit and you got a soft golf course, unfortunately, now we find out winds are starting to kick in. That wasn't the way when they would have been making the tee times up. But in that 48-hour window, what's the best chance for there to be an opportunity for a player to get conditions that are not as hideous as they have or are being forecast to be all around it Friday morning? So tuck them out there on Friday morning and see what happens. Right? Remember, this is the Masters. They can do whatever they want. So I look into it with the tee times. Andrew, let's throw some of those tee times up there. I definitely think you can look into it in terms of tee times. I definitely think when you look at tee times, you can get a sense of where the tournament's going. Yep. Let's put these guys right in here, knowing what forecasts are going to be and all the rest. And you get a sense of them going, you know, I want to try to give, and I get it with Tiger. I understand it. It is. I just used the phrase before, good for business. Tiger's good for business. Tiger has a chance to make the cut and get through the cut. That's good for business. That's good for ratings. So, and I want to go through airtimes before we wrap up here today. Fred Ridley, the chairman, is speaking at 11 a.m. Really curious what he has to say today. I wonder if the assembled are going to be willing to ask the questions about the status of the game that seemingly they weren't willing or brave enough to ask of Tiger Woods. I still am amazed by that. That was disappointing to me. I think there was an opportunity missed there, and I don't know why. So I'm curious about what would happen with Fred. In terms of the, and as I just mentioned to you, I want to go through airtimes, but in terms of the featured groups, Dom, do we have that illustrated yet? Featured group coverage?
Yes, it's there on your screen. There it is, Tiger Woods.
Yeah, that's understandable. Scheduled at 1:24 tomorrow, you know, and I keep on throwing scheduled in there for obvious reasons, along with Jason Day and Max Homa. 2 p.m. in the afternoon,
yes. So,
Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood. At 10:30 a.m., John Rahm, Matt Fitzpatrick, Nick Dunlap. At 10:54, Wyndham Clark, Victor Hovland, and Cameron Smith. Pretty shocking to me that we don't have Rory. We don't have Scotty Scheffler.
Andrew, put the full tee times up, because you can see there the feature groups, and then you can see the full tee times. You can see who we don't have in the feature groups, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, particularly because the Masters can do whatever
Scheffler,
they want.
Rory, and Xander, like, how is that not a feature group? What the hell? Matsuyama's Zalatoris Thomas? I don't know. I mean, even Cantlay Fowler and Min Woo Lee is interesting to me.
The Masters can do whatever they want to do. It's their bat and it's their ball. And they could park featured group coverage on Masters.com and the Masters app, which we're all going to be consuming tons of in the coming hours and days. So I just, their whole philosophy of less is more, someone could look at that and go, what are you talking about? The Masters is the biggest event in golf in terms of if you measure it by ratings and all the rest. So obviously what they're doing is working, but I don't know, in 2024, yeah, Spieth there at 148 too.
I mean, it's the Masters, right? A lot of these groups are feature groups. Look at them all.
That's true. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That the technology exists today that you could do something with all of them. You could literally park the vast majority of the field, if not the entire field, someplace. So it's interesting to see the decisions that they made there. As to the air times, let's go through that so you get a sense of what's happening from today and onward. You heard me mention that Fred Ridley will be addressing the media today. Masters on the Range is on the air just right now. It's just coming on there because these are all Eastern time. And then tomorrow morning, Masters on the Range is scheduled at 8:30 a.m. We'll see. Again, I throw the word scheduled in there, as you know, for obvious reasons, because of what's coming at us. Featured group coverage at 9:15, Amen Corner at 10:45, holes 15 and 16 at 11:45, and then highlights at 11:35 p.m., again, all Eastern. On Friday, Masters on the Range kicks off at 8:30 a.m., featured groups at 9:15, Amen Corner at 10:45, holes 15 and 16 at 11:45, then again, the highlight show. Let's take a look at Saturday so you know when you can find Masters on the Range scheduled at 11 a.m. Now, obviously, all this, and again, throwing the term scheduled in there is with intent that if things need to be moved around, then I think particularly on Saturday and Sunday, things could start early. Featured group at 10:15, Amen Corner 11:45, holes 15 and 16 at 12:30. Dedicated programming through CBS, including, you can see there, the 2019 Masters, Tiger's last win. Third round coverage at 3 p.m. on Saturday. 3 p.m. is also the coverage time on Thursday and Friday on ESPN. Mike Leaves, who was with us yesterday, just to wrap that up too. And then an 8 p.m. re-air on CBS Sports Network. On Sunday, you can see it gets all started at 11 a.m. for Masters on the Range, but featured group coverage is scheduled to go earlier than that. Amen Corner 11:45, holes 15 and 16 to 12:30, specialized programming. CBS's coverage of the Masters at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and then a re-air at 8 p.m. Eastern time. All these times are Eastern in the evening. So you have
Matt, I can give you some quick update on the TV side, because obviously most of what we're going over here right now is sort of the ability for you to watch everything digitally because there's so much available coverage. But the generic TV times are 3 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday and Friday on ESPN, and Saturday at 3 p.m. on CBS, and Sunday at 2 p.m. on CBS. So ESPN, ESPN, CBS, CBS, if you're looking to watch the generic general network television coverage. And then today, which is Wednesday, obviously, at 3 o'clock today, ESPN is covering the par 3 contest, which is always fun to watch the guys with their kids. It's always fun.
Yeah, it may be our first and last chance to watch them hit shots for some hours, depending upon what this weather front does as it comes rolling in. I hope you guys have a great Masters. I hope you guys are able to enjoy the competition once it gets underway in earnest. If you want to send us photos of your Masters setup, then please go to fairwayslife.com. You can click the contact there, or it's contact@fairwayslife.com, and Dom will be able to see that. I am giving away a Callaway Paradigm AI Smoke driver. If you'd like to win that, then if you go onto any of our social media, like at Matt Adams FOL on X, or formerly known as Twitter, or go on to Instagram. Especially in the Instagram one, there are details of what you need to do. You have to make sure that you are a follower, and you have to tag three friends in the comments, and then make sure you're also a subscriber on our YouTube channel, which Dom tells me to tell you guys to smash the like button. If you're watching us on the YouTube channel, you have to hit the like button for us, apparently. So thank you for that too. But if you are in those positions and you're in the running, and somebody's going to win this $500-$600 driver when we do the drawing a little bit down the road. So thank you so much for your company. It's great to have these conversations as always. Good job to our guys in putting all this together this week. Again, enjoy the Masters, and we'll talk to you as it all wraps up to review everything that took place. Bye for now.
I got ball fit in 2000, went on a little run. Then Bridgestone fit me again, and I went on another run. I just got fit again for the new Tour BX. The ball fitting's been helping me. Will it help you?
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports, or you're, what, why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
PGA Tour Superstore Pros aren't born, they're made. Every January, hundreds of associates talk to the top manufacturers, learn about the latest clubs, test the newest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together, hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first-of-its-kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow-me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Pick up your Stride today at a local PGA Tour superstore near you or at zerofriction.com/stride. Stride, your personal caddy.